Good afternoon, everyone. Hope you all enjoyed your lunch. So I'm Tom, I'm compulsive eater, and I'm the speaker co-chair. We have four wonderful women who are going to be sharing their experience, strength, and hope.
Hello, my name is Larissa, compulsive eater. Thank you, Tom, for opening up my head to make a quick run there. We've had some real good speakers. Last night was awesome. I mean, really good. Yeah. And today we got, last night we had all men. Today we have all women. And they are here ready to share their experience, strength, and hope, and tell us how they did it and what it's like and what they're doing it now to keep recovering. I don't know if we saw, did Tom start off with a prayer? Okay, we always start everything with a prayer. So let's all get real quiet. You can close your eyes or keep them wide open. Do whatever you want. You can pray or not pray. If you have a higher power, which I do, I choose to call mine God, you can pray to whatever higher power you have in your own heart. But we will say the serenity prayer again. Okay? God, grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thy will, not Larissa's, be done. Amen. Because you don't want my will to be done at all. Everything that we do, we start off with what it looks like. And we always come back to, it's always the 12 steps that gets us where we're going. And our higher power, who I think created the 12 steps, keeps us going one day at a time. So as a person in the program, each one of us are A. Each one of us are one. Each one of us are every. Every one of us are here, and I'm thinking for recovery. I have no other reason to be here but for recovery. If I'm not here for recovery, then I am going to be very lost or whatever. So let's all listen to these wonderful women speak and see and hear how each and every one of them recovered and are still recovering. I'm going to start off with the first speaker, and they'll line it up here, ready to go. Susan, Cheryl, Debbie, and Linda. None of these women are from the same state or city, yet they're all in recovery. Isn't that wonderful? You know, every one of us, we're all blessed to be here, no matter where we reside or where we come from. We're all here. So I'm going to start off with the first speaker. Susan, are you ready? Okay, let's go.
Hi there, I'm Susan. I'm a compulsive eater. Hey. So what it was like, food was it for me from the beginning, and it just got worse and worse and worse and worse. And I did hear about and attend for many years, the original 12-step food recovery program. And, you know, it was a place where I went to complain and sometimes be abstinent. You could share at meetings. You didn't have to be abstinent. And yet I felt like it was the only answer for me. I just wasn't willing to explore the ideas of humility and higher power and surrender and trust in something other than myself. So after about 14 years in that program, I left to go back to the food. And I spent 9 years in the food. I had 2 young kids, raising the kids. I was so unhappy. And, you know, I didn't know anything else except food and being angry and shutting down and hiding and a lot of fear and defensiveness. And the one thing I could do to help with all the calories I was consuming was to exercise, and I exercised a lot. And it was clear to me, you know, I was operating with a lot of low-level pain as a result of the exercising. And there was that small, still voice, which higher power probably was, that said, there's going to be a point where you're not going to be able to exercise because the injuries are going to be so great. And then even a smaller voice said, and you're going to start eating more because you're freaked out and the weight's going to go up. And I knew, you know, all bets were going to be off and I was going to kill myself with the eating. And I live in the San Francisco Bay Area, and there's a parallel program to CEHAL, weighed and measured, no flour, no sugar, even more rigid, but it's really big in the Bay Area. And I heard 2 women on a radio talk show, and they were telling about losing great amounts of weight and keeping it off for years. And I was willing to at least explore it. I did not want to give up flour. I was willing to give up sugar. No flour, thank you. No putting it on a scale, nope. And yet I went, and I was hopeful. I was hopeful. So I was in that program for 5.5 years, and that program taught me about structure and commitment and becoming neutral around my food. And they were also breaking traditions and telling me I had to do things that had nothing to do with food. But it was working. I'm 80 pounds less than I was when I started in 2007. September 2nd, 2007 is my abstinence date. Anyway, so 5.5 years into that program, I heard about CEHAL. And I went on PhoneBridge because there are no meetings in the Bay Area, still no meet. Well, actually, there's one very struggling meeting in the Bay Area that I just couldn't stick with. And went on the PhoneBridge and I found my new home, because what CEHAL offers that I wasn't seeing and getting in that other program was compassion and welcoming and love. You know, the other program, the kind of the seemed like the attitude was, you're going to break and we're going to hold you so tight so you don't break. And, you know, and CEHAL gives me tons of structure, gives us tons of structure, but it also loves you as you are, loves me as I am. And this is my home. Service is a big part of my recovery. I need to keep giving back what has so freely been given to me, what has been created in the past. We're 25, something like 25, 26 years old, this organization. And I just wanted to keep on growing. I want it to be available to us as well as those who have not yet found us and need it. But I wanted to get to the theme of this convention, which is Pause for the Miracles. And there are so many miracles in my life. I had incredible public speaking anxiety when I started in my true recovery. In the other program, you were instructed, you're going to raise your hand to get called to do the readings. But in those meetings, you walk to the front of the room. And, you know, and so I put up my hand and I get called down, and my you know, legs were like jelly and my mouth was dried up and my vision was dimming. But I did it, and I, you know, did it at each meeting. I raised my hand and got called on plenty. And then in that program, it was 90 days of abstinence. You know, I started speaking, you know, being the lead speaker, and the same thing. It was like the vision dim, the mouth dried up, and even though I didn't understand fully higher power, something was happening. So there was some kind of spiritual awakening. And I would just say, and it was an act as if thing, you know, just, you know, tell me the words to speak. I trust, I trust, I trust. I didn't trust, I didn't trust. But I was saying it. And it at least got me through. And, you know, and eventually my sponsor, I forget how it came up, but it was something about this wish to do some acting. And she said, go start taking lessons, acting lessons. And I did. And she said, you know, I did that for a couple of years. She said, you know, is that all? I said, well, no. And she said, start going on auditions. And I, oh boy, ooh. Anyway, I ended up doing some industrial acting things, and I even was in a community theater musical. I was originally cast in a small speaking role, and then the directors changed, and the director who was actually directing the show took a look at me on the first thing. And she said, oh, no, you're not good enough. And she didn't say it quite that clearly, but it was clear. Anyway, and she gave me the choice. You can go into the chorus or you can leave. And, you know, leaving would have been my normal choice, like, let me just disappear because this is really embarrassing. But I knew I had something to learn. So the 2 days that I came back, not in that speaking role, in the chorus, and I just went to each person. I already made friends with people and just got through the embarrassment and learned so much. And anyway, I still get nervous doing public speaking, but this program, the previous program as well, has given me this gift of the capacity to do this. Two other things. Travel, terrible anxiety around traveling, still there, but it's like the dial has been turned way down. It's like, yeah, you don't sleep as well when you're about to go traveling, you know, until you're through TSA and they're looking at all my food and whatever, you know, getting nervous, but, you know, I'm so much better. And then the other one is medical anxiety. I mean, just going to visit my doctor for an annual, and I would, you know, the sweat and the heart and the blood pressure was high. And again, the dial is turned. It's not gone. But I had surgery 2.5 years ago, back surgery. And I had a spiritual experience on surgery day. I was grateful for every single person that I came in contact with. I was connected to all the people that, you know, I talk to regularly in program. My heart was connecting to my family. I mean, it was just like this big love thing. Oh, and the other thing, we had just returned from a trip to Hawaii, and the day before we left, we took a whale watching trip, and we had this magical experience where a pod of whales had surrounded our little tiny boat like right up at the water. It was, oh my God, they were doing their flippers and their tails, and the baby was swimming right up to our boat. Oh my gosh. Anyway, I decided, and I don't do this kind of thing, that the whale was my spirit animal. Anyway, and they were. I thought I'd hate the, I forget what they stick in your arm for the, yes, you know what I'm saying. You know, oh. Anyway, I said to myself, well, if I were one of my whale spirit animals, I'd be saying, ha, ha, you can't hurt me. I've got, you know, skin of toughness and have at it. And I kept on going back to the whales. And it was truly amazing to have gone from this biggest baby at any kind of medical procedure to be able to get to that. And I came out pretty good. So miracles abound. Miracles abound, small and large. This program is incredible, and there is always more for me to learn and grow. And I'm working on humility these days. And I put that out a year and a half ago, kind of as a not quite New Year's resolution. And I didn't know what was going to happen. And I still don't know what's going to happen. But it keeps on showing itself, because I'm just open to whatever that means and whatever it's going to look like for me. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. That was awesome. Okay. Our very next speaker is Cheryl.
Oh, boy. Hi, happy abstinent people. So happy to see my tribe. Haven't been on stage for a long time. This is awesome. They say I only have 12 minutes, so I'm going to have to try and fit it in. Those of you who know me that 12 minutes is not long enough. But anyway, I'm so tickled and happy that I was asked to share. My story in a nutshell what is my story in a nutshell? Okay, I'm going to qualify it. Okay. I joined the program, this wonderful membership, on July 20th of 1993. Tomorrow will be 32 years that I've been in the program. I have recently recommitted my abstinence a couple times in the last few years, but I lost all of my weight, 140 pounds, the first 13 months of program, and I've been on maintenance ever since. Nate Kaming, 140 pound weight loss. Thank you. It's not something I did myself, that's for sure, or I wouldn't still be here. The story goes is that I was a yo-yo dieter like everybody else. Food was my obsession, and I always thought that it was fine because I didn't have any other issues. I was a single parent of three kids, holding down job, two jobs. And that was what I rewarded myself with. That was my reward when my kids would go to their fathers, being divorced for the weekend. My favorite thing to do would be to go and get a bunch of my goodies from the store, go to the video store, if you guys remember video stores, pick up a few videos, set them right in front of the TV, and I didn't even put everything in the kitchen. I had it sitting all around me so I wouldn't have to get up. And that was my treat. That's how I took care of myself. It just got worse. I started grabbing food on the way to work. I was a school bus driver for 24 years, And I grab food and have it on the bus with me in between routes, and I would be eating. And I would go out and, go to the store and stuff like that. And people would say, oh, I never got to see you. You never showed up for something or whatever. And I was real isolating, really, really isolating. I was working, raising my kids. I didn't want to have anything to do with anything else. Food was my sanctuary. And then one day, after yo-yo dieting for years, a lovely lady who might be in this room, I know she's here at convention today. I was sitting in my school bus one day and in the bus yard, and I saw her running from her bus to the office. I mean, she was running. And I thought, oh, wouldn't that be nice? It'd be nice to be able to do that. And so I got to know her, and she openly shared, and if I can pass anything on to you, please, please share your program with people when they ask. It's the best thing you can ever do. You never know what ears are going to be listening. And she openly was sharing with the other drivers, not just me. I was kind of listening to the side. About her program where she had lost 90 pounds. And I'm like, okay. Well, I didn't take it super seriously because I thought she was talking about a program that I had previously been in, or at least one of the programs I'd previously been in. And I thought, oh yeah, you know, I was always one of those people, well, they can do it, but I can't. You know, I'm unique. I'm different. I can't do what everybody else is doing. That uniqueness I didn't realize was part of the disease. And so I did approach her, and I asked her what the name of it was. And back in 93, it was O.A. Howe. And I said, well, what's the difference between that and another program? And she said several things, but one of the things that she said was, it's a positive program. And I thought, oh, that really made me think. I want that positive, because I used to be a positive person. I had gotten to the point where I was just miserable, and I'd look in the mirror, and I was used to seeing an overweight person, but I wasn't used to seeing somebody else totally. I wasn't even my old personality anymore. My family, I've come to find out later, was a little concerned about me. I guess I must have gone through a little bit of depression or something. I didn't realize it at the time. Anyway, so she invited me to go to the meeting on Monday, and this was Friday. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to try this one last thing. She said it was positive. That's what I want. I need that. And I went and binged the whole weekend. I went to all my favorite fast food places, and I ate and ate and ate, and then it got to the point where I didn't want anymore. And I actually, at that last meal, threw it away, which was, somebody went, yeah, you don't throw food away. for somebody who, you know, oh, I'm going to throw this away, and then I won't want to eat it anymore. And then, you know, half an hour later, oh, let's see, it didn't touch anything, so I think I can take it out, you know? But anyways, I was done. I was ready. I was at my bottom. The thing that turned me around is that 3 months earlier, I had been in a program where I had lost 25 pounds, and my thing that I would do is that I would join. I'd lose a few pounds. I needed to lose over 100, but 25 pounds, and then I'd give up. And then, you know, I remember driving home from that last meeting and thinking to myself, okay, I believed in God. I believed He was a good God, but I was one of those prayers that prayed for something. I didn't know anything about His will or anything. And I didn't know anything about compulsive overeating and that it could be a problem, just like alcohol and everything else. I didn't know I had a relationship with all that. So I remember speaking to God out loud on my way home from one of the last diet meetings that I went to. And I remember saying, okay, I'm done. I'm just done with this. No more dieting. God, this is the way you made me. I'm going to be happy like this, right? Okay, well, that was at 260 pounds. I said that. 3 months later, I was up to 290. 3 months. And I was going to be happy maintaining weight. Yeah, I'll be happy. I'm going to maintain this weight at 260. And I wasn't really happy, but, you know, I was done. I was finished with all this yo-yo dieting, trying out the newest thing, making resolutions every New Year's Eve, and then not sticking with it for very long, losing about 25 pounds. And that was about my best. And that is the best thing I could have ever done in my entire life, was to give up on me. Give up trying myself. That, I see now, opened me up to other possibilities. And when I gained that 30 pounds, 10 pounds a month, in 3 months, I was terrified. I was just terrified. I knew then something that I really didn't know. The only thing I did know is that what's wrong with me? What is wrong with me? I can't maintain being overweight. What is that? That I didn't know that was a thing. I didn't know anything about weight and how it goes, you know, can keep going up and up and up, and how this is a disease and it just keeps moving on. And so between giving up on trying to fix myself and gaining that weight, I was ready by the time I met that friend, that coworker who shared with me so graciously her weight loss journey. And I got into program and I went into, I went to a meeting. I got a sponsor. And I remember that first meeting people were sharing and I'm just like, are they reading my book? Was there a hidden camera? How did they know what I was doing? And how did they know especially what I'm thinking? You know, all these compulsive thoughts that go through your head. And I found my tribe. I know I use that word a lot, and we all do, but it's true. I always thought that I was like an alien on a planet. And nobody gave me any idea how to live here. So I was on my own. And I didn't know I had like people at all. As a matter of fact, I have a little story. It's so funny. I share at meetings sometimes where I think I see myself up in heaven and I see two lines to go down to earth, right? Okay, so one line has, you're waiting in it, and it's a long line, and you wait a long time, but it's the line you want because it's the line that has the instructions on how to live on earth, right? Okay, fine. Okay, well, little Miss Stubborn Me, who always wanted her own way and didn't want to wait, went to the other line where I'm just like, oh, I know what I'm doing. I've got this. And so I always say I was in that other line. I came down here with no instructions, thought I was totally on my own on how to deal with life, and then couldn't do it on top of it. And thank you. And then I found the instructions in this program. The black and white paper that told me, our literature that told me who I was, how to conduct myself every day in life, how to deal with life's ups and downs without going to the food. And I say to people, I didn't only just get my life back, I got a new life. I have changed from the inside out. As a matter of fact, people have even said that. I remember calling my mom, even just after 30 days. I had lost 20 pounds the first month, but at being 290, you know, you can't really tell. I could tell. You know, I was feeling really good. I was feeling, you know, lifted from the sugar and stuff. But I called my mom one time and I said, finally, I thought, I'm going to tell her about this program, right? And she afterwards, after I confessed what I was doing, she said, well, can I tell you something? And I said, sure. And she said, well, we were kind of worried about you, you know? And I thought, well, maybe they were worried I was gaining weight. But no, she said, we were worried about you. You're you've been depressed and isolating and stuff like that. She says, lately, this last month, when I talk to you on the phone, you answer the phone like it's like you have joy in your life again. And she said, because I was single, she said, I thought you had a new boyfriend. I said, and you know what? So cool. I said something that just came out of my mouth, and it's been so true now for 32 years. I said, no, Mom, I think I found something better that's going to last longer. And I didn't even know that for sure. I just said it. And look, it did. It's awesome. So pause for the miracle. Stay. You're going to love it. You're just going to love it. It's going to change you from the inside out, and people are going to notice. And so that's what I have to share. And share your program. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you so much. That was so good. Each one of them, you know, they just get all of their program out and they let us have all the good stuff that's happening to them, and it's happening really in a good way. 12-step program. The next speaker, Debbie, are you ready?
Thank you, Loretta. My name's Debbie. I'm a compulsive eater. Hi, it's so good to see all your beautiful faces. By the grace of God, I've been abstinent for 19 years, 2 months, and 4 days with an 80-pound weight relief. But it's not my will, for sure. My will was to binge my brains out, just to go somewhere else. I didn't know what I wanted. I had no idea. I knew, you know, at a very early age, I came from people who were a long line of dysfunction, and my grandmother was a compulsive eater. She was probably OCD, too, because she would fold her little grocery bags into, like, this little square. Oh, my God. I was like, wow, girl. She was very organized. yeah, my mom came from crazy, and I was taught how to be crazy, and a lot of codependence, a lot of dysfunction. And, you know, the fact that I ate it saved my life for a long time, because I really wanted to die. I didn't want to be here. I didn't understand what they were talking about when they told me I had an attitude problem. I was like, your problem? I don't know what, I don't have a problem. I was always somebody else's problem, always somebody else's issue. I could not look at myself. I really was very, very, I didn't even understand what they were talking about. It was just felt like I was an alien. I was born in Neptune, New Jersey. So that was my excuse. I'm left-handed. I'm redhead. You know, all these things that made me different. It was definitely, my compulsive eating started very early. I was 13, and I have my pictures going around somewhere. I was over 200 pounds, and my mom took me to Weight Watchers. And I remember going and losing like 30 pounds and thinking, okay, now what do I do? Because I don't feel any different. I obviously have a personality problem, you know? And I remember going to the kitchen, getting food, and just sitting on the couch and eating it. And I went back to the kitchen to put my plate away. I got more food. And I did that 5 times. And I remember sitting on the couch and wondering why I can't put my plate away. There's something seriously wrong with me. And I had no idea what it was. But I found other things to keep me occupied for a while. I got into drinking very early at 16, and that really helped me stay alive as well. And I don't do anything just a little, you know. I definitely hit the rocks with that at 27. My mom was not happy with me because I was divorcing my first husband because he was my problem. And yes, of course, I'm on drugs and crazy and doing speed to control my weight, and had a 4-year-old kid. And I'm living at home with my mom, and she's not happy with me. So I had to go to charter. And she was like, I didn't want to do that, but I did it anyway. And then they told me to start going to AA meetings. And I got sober in 96. And there were people in my home group, and they were weighing and measuring their food. And I thought they were crazy. This lady was licking the bowl like she'd never eaten before. And I was like, what is wrong with you? They don't feed you around here? What the hell? Oh, next thing I knew, in 1998, I was in a meeting of CHOW, Monta Vista. And there was a lady greeting at the door, and she was thin, and I wanted what she had, of course. And she started sponsoring me, and I had lost all my weight. I was 9 months abstinent. I was food inventory step maintenance sponsor, and I'm good now. Like, I didn't know that. I had never reached my goal weight in my life. I was always over 200 pounds or less, you know, and that limit never ended. But I got abstinent and proceeded to not really take it seriously. I wasn't going to do my outreach call. I'm not doing any of that stuff, you know, just like, okay. But I really, I lost my abstinence, and for 10 years, I could not put any time together. And it was torture because I would come in and out. And I think the longest I stayed away was 3 years. And it was real hell. I met my second husband and had two kids with him. And by the time my baby was 6 months old, I didn't want to be here anymore. And I really felt sorry for them because they were like 14 months apart. And they didn't have a mom that really wanted to be here. It's like really sad. So I came back to a Friday meeting, and it was an adult child focus meeting, which is funny to me because I didn't think I was an adult child. I didn't think any of that. I just thought I had a food problem. Meanwhile, these are the causes and conditions of why I eat. It's because I came from crazy, and I don't know how to live, and I'm a compulsive eater, and I know that for a fact. And I just got desperate. I got desperate. I started making my phone calls. I started doing whatever it took. I had two little kids. I brought them to a meditation meeting one time. And this lady, she kicked me out because I'm like, you got to go. They're two little, you know, kids under two, and they're running around like crazy making all this noise. And it was so funny. I had a resentment. I wasn't going to come back. And I was like, you know what? I don't care. I have to save my life. This shit is going to kill me. I will die. This is where I go when I eat. I don't eat just a little. I have severe depression. I don't know if the food starts my depression or what, but I know for me that if I eat or pick up, I will end up back to that place of wanting to kill myself. And I am powerless, so I have to do whatever it takes. I don't care what it is. I will do whatever it takes to not eat compulsively today. I know I cannot make that happen, that I'm powerless every day. My life is unmanageable every day. And the miracle is that I don't want to eat today. I don't need to eat today. And the more I work on my insides and not having to eat all the stuff that I ate over, and there was a lot, I always had an excuse, something to eat over. You know, a fingernail, God forbid, something happened that day. It was, gotta go eat. You know, that was I did not know that food was not a coping mechanism for life. You know, I used food as a coping mechanism. And the fact that my life is over here and my food is over here is a miracle. That I can deal with whatever happens in my life, because there's a lot to happen. I got, you know, my mom passed away. My husband went to jail. I had two little kids to raise on my own. And I knew that if I didn't do more program and go to more meetings and get myself in the middle of the herd, then I was gonna die. There was just no other way. Thank you. And yeah, I'm a little dramatic, but I'm grateful. I'm grateful I got to that place because I know that there's no other option. There's no other way. There's no other way. And really is, I never thought I would be a grateful compulsive eater. I'm very grateful that I don't eat compulsively today. I'm still a compulsive eater. It doesn't matter. I will always be a compulsive eater. The fact that I don't compulsively eat today is a miracle. And you are all miracles. And I'm so glad to be here, and I would want to welcome the newcomers and give you hope, because I was hopeless and I didn't think this was going to work. I didn't think it was going to happen for me. I didn't think I could put any time together for a really long time. I struggled, and I just had to keep coming. There was no other place for me to go. And the fact that I do other things as well to, you know, I have to be spiritually fit. I can lose my serenity in a minute. And really, there's nothing worth my serenity today. No person, place, or thing. I get to have, my two little kids are going to be 21 and 19. And these kids have not seen me compulsively eat. My baby was 6 months old when I got here. And I'm saving him seat because I love him dearly, but it's really hard to watch. It's hard to watch people kill themselves with food. It's just, I don't know if it's inherited. I don't know what it is. They come from the same people. You know, me and my brother are totally different. He doesn't seem to have a problem, but I know for me that I'm different from my fellows. I eat differently. I do everything different. My thinking is different. It starts with my thinking. I really love the tools that we abstain from negative thinking. The only reason is because it will kill me. It will kill me. If I start negative thinking, I don't stop. I don't do it just a little. I don't do just a little resentment. I don't know how to do any of that little. The minute I get a resentment, I got to ask God to help me. I have to pray for that person. I have to be spiritually fit on a minute by minute basis. Because if I'm not, I'm screwed. If I don't have a higher power, I'm in trouble. And I know for a fact that I have a higher power today, that he loves me, that he wants the best for me, that I get to define what that is for me. I know it's peace and serenity, because that's not where I come from. You know, to be restored to sanity, I didn't even know what sanity was. I know serenity, the chatter in my head is quiet. That's a miracle. And that's what happens when I put the food down. I don't have to think about the food. I don't have to think about where I'm going to get it, how I'm going to get it, how I'm going to lose the weight, all that. It's so much garbage. It's so much garbage. And when I know my weighed and measured meals, they just give me so much peace and serenity. And then everything else just works out the way it's supposed to. I don't need to worry about anything else. I just know that I'm taken care of. And if I stay abstinent, anything's possible. Because I could not stay abstinent for a day when I got back this last time. I don't ever want to go back to that hell again. So I'm glad to be here. Thanks for letting me share.
It just keeps getting better and better, doesn't it? We are really blessed. We are. To have a program and have all of us here and want to be here with each other. I guess you want to be with me, I hope. But anyway. And our next speaker, Linda. Are you ready?
Hi, everybody. Wow. This has been great. There's so much recovery here, and I'm so blessed to be a part of it. And I want to thank all of you for being here and for Aretha for asking me to share my story. Aretha saved my life. I was at a drive-thru in Dahlonega, Georgia, with a place that did not serve anything that was on our food plan. And she called me up because she hadn't heard from me in a long time. And she said, "What are you doing?" That was the first thing out of her mouth. It was like God gave her this ESP to know what was going on with me. So I said, "Hang on." So I pulled out of the drive-thru and got over in the parking lot and recommitted. You know, anyway, let me go back to the beginning and tell you what I was like. But I just have to give Aretha, you know, my heartfelt gratitude for that. But anyway, what I was like was I was a compulsive eater. That's why I'm here. I used food to cope with life because I didn't have any other resources, you know, that I knew to go on. My family was very religious. There was no drinking. There was no smoking. There was no drugs. But boy, was there a lot of food. You know, what was weird, though, was they did not gain weight. That was the crazy thing, you know, and yet they ate. They did eat compulsively. Whenever there was anything sweet in the house, it was like the locust had descended. You know, there was nothing left. So my parents, in their wisdom, did not keep any sweets around. You know, they were Depression era survivors, so they didn't believe in that stuff. And they worked real hard. We worked real hard. We had a farm, you know, that we had a garden. My dad made rows of green beans that were 3 miles long, and I had to pick them. So, you know, that took a lot of time and a lot of energy. So I wasn't overweight when I was little. And then when I was in school, I was real active. I did a lot of, you know, active things in high school. But what happened to change all that was that I was date raped when I was in college. And it traumatized me. You know, after, you know, this was back in the 60s. There was no rape crisis center. You didn't talk about it. The thinking then was, forget about it. You know, sweep it under the rug. Well, in order to do that, I had to eat, you know, and then oblivion, you know, and I didn't care anymore. I did get married. I had a wonderful husband. He was a Vietnam vet. He had his own PTSD, you know, so together we kind of helped each other out. You know, we had our children. One of the greatest blessings of my life is to be a mom. And I'm truly grateful today for those children. They're grown now. And I have grandchildren and great-grandchildren. And I'm truly, that's a miracle. That's a miracle right there. What happened, though, this husband was so worried about me. You know, I had tried everything under the sun. I did all of the, well, there weren't even that many back then, but there were some weight loss organizations, you know, that took your money and weighed you every month and made you drink, well, not drink water, and then you had to eat liver. I was like, oh, shoot. You know, it was horrible. But, you know, I lost some weight. But the minute I went off, I gained it all back again. And then I did the diet pills back then. It was literally speed. And my doctor would give it to me for 2 months. And I would get on that. And it was like I could sweep the cobwebs off the ceiling. You know, it was wonderful. You know, I was the best housekeeper you ever saw. And after 2 months of that, my husband said, if you ever take another one of those damn pills, I'm divorcing you. So, and he meant it too. I was really the wicked witch of the, you know what. So after that, I decided, you know, screw it. I'll just get fat again, you know, who cares? But God had other plans. We had moved to Texas, and there was a letter in the newspaper from, it was a Dear Abby column, and a man in Houston had lost over 100 pounds. Now, I made big numbers, you know, to get my attention. This was not just, you know, Weight Watchers or whatever. He said it was the first 12-step program for food recovery. And I happened to look in my newspaper, and not but 2 or 3 blocks from my house was a church where they had a meeting. Now, you would think that I'd go the next night, right? I cut it out, put it in a drawer, and waited because those words scared me to death. There was something about that word, anonymous. Now, I didn't know any alcoholics, but I knew they couldn't drink. And therefore, that must mean we couldn't eat. So I was like, well, I don't want that. But in desperation, you know, the gift of desperation, you know, I was willing to do that. So I go to the meeting. Now, I'm also a recovering know-it-all, okay? So we get there, And they have this, they have a food plan. And on the back of the food plan are the 12 steps. And then they have these steps up at the front of the meeting that you can see. And I'm looking at them. And one's pretty obvious, you know, I can get that. Two, yeah, probably I do need God. Sure, I sure hadn't done very good me doing it by myself. And I could do three, okay. But the rest of those, those were bad. I couldn't handle that. But what they told me, well, actually, they basically didn't tell me anything. I'm sorry. They showed me. Because, you know, when they say it's a program of attraction, it really is. They showed me through their recovery what working those steps did. And I still wasn't sold completely until they all came back from this retreat. I didn't go because my kids were little. But they came back different. They had done their fourth step and given them away at that retreat. And they were like transformed. It was a miracle. And I, you know, they were pretty good people before, but okay, gosh, we're running out of time. Anyway, long story short, I decided, you know, I'm in. I'll do these steps. I'll do whatever it takes because my way's not working. My way's what got me here. And I want to give y'all three takeaways from this. One, God is either everything or he's not. And I had some problems with God. I couldn't understand why I'd had some of the experiences that I had had. I couldn't understand why the people that I loved had to suffer. And I suffered too. But, you know, that I had to make amends to God and say, okay, this is not my world. I didn't create it. It's yours. So I'm going to let you be in charge. I'm sure he appreciated that. The second thing was self-reliance failed us. They say that in the big book. I am one of those that was raised with pull yourself your bootstraps up. You do it and you're determined and you can succeed no matter what you do. That damn near killed me. I can't outthink this disease. We do not recover in isolation. I need all of you. This is a we program. I tried it by myself. I tried it with just me and God. It wasn't God's fault that I couldn't do it. He designed it because I need a community. They tell me that connection, which is what we have with each other, is the antidote to addiction. And that's what makes it work. You know, it's this community of like-minded people that speak my language, that have shared the same suffering, the same shame, the same pain. And you know, you all know it. And you encourage. Just by being here, you are the blueprint for success for somebody else. You give them that hope that this is a miracle that can happen for them too. And in closing, I want to share with you all a local one. I'm a former teacher, so, you know, I brought my lesson plans here. So anyway, so this is my little poem of gratitude. Oh God, please hear my prayer. You know this heartache and this pain. You know how many times I've tried. You know my failures and my shame. I'm tired of being miserable. I'm tired of feeling blue. And so in desperation, I now must turn to you. You heard my prayers. I know you did. And soon the answer did appear. I walked into those 12-step rooms. A miracle was near. Those see how folks were beautiful. They had an answer, too. They worked those steps and used their tools. They promised if I wanted it that God would help me, too. They asked me if I needed help. They said, here's what you do. Just pray to God for abstinence. Now weigh and measure, too. We have our meetings every day to help us on our way. This program is a way of life. We hope that you will stay. No longer am I lost in pain and misery. My higher power led me here to freedom and serenity. And so, my friend, if you are here and searching for an answer clear, well, you can have it, my dear. You never have to be alone. Welcome to recovery. Welcome home.
Wow. That's just, so you see why that we have so much recovery to share and to give and to receive because we have speakers like these. Let me tell you, we started off California. We went from California to Oregon. Went from Oregon to Nevada. And it went all the way from Nevada to the great big, the biggest state in the union, Texas. So here we are today. Thank you all for you women for sharing your experience, strength, and hope, and for all the good that you keep giving out and giving. And we want to let you know that we care about you and we love you just like you care about and love us. Thank you.